This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work. This WBEZ podcast is supported by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention. Connection is the greatest strength in the fight against suicide. Together, we can encourage those who are struggling to seek help and to know they're not alone. For free resources or to learn how you can get involved in their mission, visit afsp.org.
Hey, Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Mayor Brandon Johnson is back in the studio for our monthly series, Ask the Mayor. This is when he spends the hour answering your questions and ours. And there's a lot to get to today. Johnson's marking 3 years as the city's chief executive. We'll dig into some of the controversies and issues that have tripped him up, and we'll hear what the mayor considers some of his biggest wins for Chicagoans. The city council held a packed, contentious meeting yesterday with lots on the agenda, plus the parking meter deal that Chicago loves to hate. What's the latest on that? So far, he's been dodging the re-election questions. But as Mayor Johnson marks those 3 years, I had to ask, are you running for a second mayoral term? Here's Johnson.
My focus is on ensuring that we build the safest, most affordable big city in America. As you know, over the course of these last 3 years, we've made some incredible strides towards doing that, right? Building more affordable homes in the last 3 years than any other administration. Our airport is the busiest airport in the world. More people visiting our city than ever. We've expanded youth employment. We've expanded mental and behavioral health care. We have made our city the most pro-worker city in America. And we reduced violent crime by 50%, right? And the fewest amount of homicides last year recorded in the last 60 years. So we're building towards the safest, most affordable big city in America. The people of Chicago deserve a politician that's going to continue to focus on them solely.
Right.
And we'll deal with the politics when that time is appropriate.
Do you think you want to keep that momentum going for a second term?
I mean, look, there's obviously a lot of work to do. And when I was sworn in, the city was in peril, right? We had an international global crisis where no one had an answer. No one had an answer when buses were being sent to the city of Chicago and cities across America. We were able to fix that. We built a one shelter system out of that. So right now, for the first time in over a decade, families do not have to wait for a shelter bed in the event that they, you know, find themselves without a house or home, right? And so, look, we've taken crises and we have turned it into opportunity for people. And I'm going to continue to work hard every day to make sure that we build safe and affordable communities. And that's the focus that's important right now.
Yeah, so let's continue reflecting. Tell me what you see as your biggest win for Chicagoans.
Wow. I mean, you know, look, I mean, where do I start? I mean, I think the fact that community safety was a top issue that folks were concerned about when I ran. In fact, if you recall, folks said that if you were to elect Mayor Brandon Johnson, there would be blood in the streets and a massive exodus of police officers. It didn't happen. In fact, there's no mayor in modern history that can say or claim that they oversaw the city at a time in which we had historic lows in homicides and more people visiting our city ever in the history of our city, right? So the fact that we have not experienced a reduction in population over the last few years since I've been in office, we're the only major city that has not lost population. In fact, we have grown population. We have, you know, provided more opportunities for young people than any other administration. Last summer, 31,119 summer jobs through our Shy Youth Works program. We had a pilot program a couple of years ago where we hired young people from Chicago Public Schools to work for the Streets and Sanitation Department over the summer. We have 183 total from both of those cohorts. That first cohort, by the end of next year, they will be 22 years old, earning $90,000 a year, right? And so I think between driving violence down and creating more opportunities for folks, and especially really expanding mental and behavioral health care. You know, Sasha, when Mayor Harry Washington died, there were 19 mental health clinics. When I was sworn in, we were down to six. Two administrations ago, he closed half of them. I reopened three, expanded the CARE program, Crisis Assistance Response and Engagement, so that when a mental health crisis occurs, we have a paid behavioral mental health crisis professional that shows up to that scene no matter where you are in the city, and a police officer does not have to dedicate their time to responding to mental and behavioral health crises. So we're building safe and affordable communities. I mean, I don't have anything else to add outside of the fact that there's a lot more work to do, but we are clearly moving in the right direction.
We are approaching that midway point in Chicago's fiscal year. You told our colleagues, Fran Spielman and Mariah Wolfe, last week that $90 million that was projected to be raised through selling off Chicagoans' medical debt, that hasn't materialized. So how do we replace that in the next 6 months?
That's a great question. Look, this was a failure by the city council, right? We had an opportunity to secure progressive revenue from the largest corporations in the city of Chicago that received the largest tax break in the history of America by Donald Trump. Why city council decided to stand alongside of Trump's initiatives to protect our largest corporations, that is mind-boggling to me, to be perfectly frank with you. And I'm not sure if they'll have that same conclusion that I'm coming to, but that's the reality. They made a decision to sell the debt of working people off. And look, we're going to still try to find someone to purchase it. We just have not been able to do that. In this climate, this economic climate, that's a very difficult sell. In the meantime, I'm going to look at all of the options that are available to me to figure out how we can avoid laying people off.
Yeah. Another $31 million in the budget passed at the end of last year is supposed to come from a social media tax that's currently being litigated. So we don't know if that could very well fall through as well.
Well, we did not count that in our budget because we knew it was going to be litigated, right? So that was a strategic decision to go for it. And by the way, we're the first body of government to institute a social media tax. And now you may have seen that the governor has followed my lead and he's introduced something similar his budget for the state. So look, we are leading the charge in how we protect Chicagoans against the Trump attacks while other cities are embracing our playbook and our motto.
Could we
and
see any like furloughs of workers, state, though?
Just like the state is embracing ideas that we've put forward. As I said before, I'm going to do everything in my power to avoid having to lay people off, despite the fact that we warn city council that if you do something like this, this could have impact on delivery of services. This is why I'm calling on all of Chicago to remain engaged with their alders. The people of Chicago preferred the corporate head tax. Corporate interests obviously got into the ears of city council members, shook them up, made them, believe that those businesses would leave. And there's just no empirical evidence ever in the history of Chicago that a corporate head tax would reduce our ability to continue to grow our economy. It was a failed strategy. I'm going to do what I've been doing, is trying to clean up the malfeasance that I inherited while making sure that we're prioritizing working people every day. My goal is to continue to build the safest, most affordable big city in America. And I want the people of Chicago to come alongside of one another so that we can actually see that come to fruition.
Mayor Johnson, let's go to the phones because we've got people waiting, like Clark in Hyde Park. Hi, Clark. What is your question for the mayor?
Hi, Mayor.
Hi.
We still have lots of food deserts here in the city. And, even in Hyde Park, it's a challenge. I'm wondering, I know that it's really hard for small businesses to compete with these big conglomerates. I'm thinking like Hyde Park Produce or food producers like Chai Fresh Kitchen. I'm wondering, and they're great, by the way, I'm wondering how we could consider connecting our businesses together in a city logistics system. And I'm wondering what your thoughts and plans for that are.
Yeah, thank you for that question. This has been a challenge throughout the city of Chicago. And there were some discussions around how do we support local food grocery to support our communities. There's a really good example of how we partnered with 40 Acres on the west side of Chicago. It's actually Black owned, a young woman who started just with fresh vegetables, working with community-based organizations and making those fresh vegetables and fruit available for the community. And it's turned into a locally ran grocery store. And we have helped support, those efforts. So I believe that there are ways, and this is a really good motto, and I would ask Clark for you to look into this. That's the model that we are looking to take citywide, using the investment bond that I put forward, the largest investment bond in the history of Chicago, to help grow local grocery stores and then partner with those community-based organizations to begin to create greater access. There's another fund that we have, and I apologize, Clark. I try to remember all of these funds, but it's the Fresh Food Fund. You can look that up too. That's another way in which we're connecting with local communities to support locally grown food that could ultimately lead towards building an institution like 40 Acres on the west side in Austin. And I would encourage all of you to go visit 40 Acres on the west side of Chicago, along Chicago Avenue. It's literally right around the corner from my home. You don't have to come by and say hi, but do go by this fresh market, 40 Acres.
Thank you, Clark. On now to Phil in Beverly. Good morning, Phil. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning, Mayor Johnson. I'm a proud SIU 73 member and a Chicago resident, of course. Frontline city employees often know where services are inefficient, where improvements can be made possible. So as the city faces its budget crisis, how will your administration involve workers in their unions to identify practical solutions?
Yeah, it's a great question. So, you know, one of the things that I did right away coming out the gate, you know, we helped settle contracts for Local 73 in our parks and our schools. We raised the baseline of the lowest paid workers there. Still much more work to do, and we're increasing programs and opportunities, particularly in our parks and our schools, and I used the TIF surplus to do that. And if you may recall, you know, before I was mayor, I worked alongside of our labor partners to push for TIF surplus, right? I released the largest TIF surplus in the history of Chicago into our parks, libraries, and our schools. You know, as far as just strengthening our work, brother, the labor movement is in a great position to push city council members. And what I would ask is that as I begin to, you know, host meetings in the community around the budget, you know, I'm going to need our labor partners to participate in those meetings to really drive progressive revenue. The last thing that I'll say is the General Assembly is in session right now. The session doesn't end till May 31st. Where are our state reps and state senators and the governor around progressive revenue? Why aren't we having more conversations about a digital ad tax, a billionaire's tax, right? These are the taxes that we can place on these big conglomerates and use that revenue to support our park district workers, or to support our workers in our schools. You know, right now our schools are underfunded. $3.6 billion the state of Illinois should appropriate. 1.6 of it would go to our Chicago public schools. I would also ask that our labor partners really challenge our state reps and our state senators, because the session is not over and we have an opportunity to do something that other states have tried, but we have to protect workers against the Trump cuts. And so there's still time to do that. And I'm going to continue to push the General Assembly to find progressive revenue so that the services in which our workers provide, that those services are fully funded.
The only thing I'll say is that the city's relying on progressive revenue from Springfield, it doesn't seem like that's something on the agenda right now. And they've got, 10 more days for this session?
It is on the agenda. It's right now we're having a dominating conversation around how do we find corporate loopholes for companies who don't need it, right? I've had this conversation going back 3 years, but this conversation did not start with me when I became mayor. And furthermore, if you recall, the Speaker of the House in August of last year said that he's going to work to move a millionaire's tax. Obviously, that did not happen. I know he expressed disappointment, and so am I. But there's still time to move on a billionaire's tax. There's still time for digital ad tax. We saw the General Assembly write the transit bill at 4 o'clock in the morning, right before session ended. There is time here. This idea that somehow it's too late, I believe that's an unfortunate, you know, talking presentation that disincentivizes people to engage. The moment you tell people it's too late, you're telling working people to give up. And I'm saying it's never too late.
Here's Leah Ruth in Edgewater. Good morning. What's your question?
We had two Southsiders. What's up, Northside?
Hi. Good morning. Well, Dad grew up on the South Side, so 52 in Lawndale. So I consider myself both. Thank you, Mayor Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning.
I work at UIC, which is the city's largest public university, and I work to place our computer science students with internships at Chicago area companies. My question is, so we've seen a major decrease nationally in undergraduate application as applications to colleges as high school students are weighing the pros and cons of college education. We have such fabulous universities right here in our backyard in Chicago, and we also have top-tier companies, as I know you know, looking for talent. What can we do to make students feel more confident that Chicago is the place to be and that we will be able to get them internships and jobs for our graduating college students? Because this is one way to increase economic activity and to help with social and economic mobility for all Chicagoans.
Oh my gosh, I'm like jumping in my seat. This is something I've been focused on since the time I became mayor, and you're absolutely right. Our institutions are amazing. I'm a little heartbroken because my son decided to go to Eastern Illinois and not UIC. I'm so sorry. I tried. I wanted to keep him as close as possible. But your point is we have great institutions, public institutions throughout the entire state. And we do have to work harder to encourage our young people to take advantage of these great institutions. They are top tier. In fact, there's some encouraging news that the top destination for college graduates is the city of Chicago. And so I believe what we have to do, and we're working through this, there has to be early engagement with our young people. And you're right, the challenge is that they're weighing the option. If I go to college, am I guaranteed an opportunity? And how much is it going to cost me? And so this is why I believe that we have to find stronger ways in which we can engage young people earlier, give them the full breadth of the type of careers that are available and are opening to them. Chicago has the most diverse economy anywhere in the country. Not one industry comprises more than 14% of our overall GDP. And so and this is why I've been pushing on environmental justice, a green, blue, big deal, as we're building more affordable homes and doing it through sustainability. We just created a program on the south side of Chicago for solar panels being placed on top of our public buildings. We're hiring young people to do that. I talked earlier about hiring young people over the summer to work in our streets and sanitation department, while also encouraging them to take classes, right? And so I think it's all of the above, but it's early exposure to lift up the beauty of our public institutions and then begin to expose young people to the variant career trajectories that will encourage them to want to increase or continue their education. And that also includes, of course, finally, our community colleges, which our community colleges is the number one growing community college system anywhere in the country right now. And those are great pathways to, as you know, there's a partnership between Malcolm X on the west side and UIC with healthcare profession. We're building a brand new campus in Austin on the west side for Malcolm X, for healthcare professionals, period. I'm sorry, I know I've gone more than 15 seconds, but this is one of the things that I'm so locked in around. And I, of course, would love to continue to partner with you.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by Wise, the app for international people using money around the globe. With the Wise account, you can send, spend, and receive in up to 40 currencies with only a few simple taps. Download the Wise app today or visit wise.com. Terms and conditions apply. Be smart. Get Wise.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
All right, let's dig right back in, Mayor Johnson. The city is likely facing another $1 billion plus deficit for 2027. You've talked about the need for more, quote, progressive revenue. You mentioned it earlier today at the city level and the state level. Tell me more about why that hasn't come to pass.
Well, it has. It just has not come you know, with the gravitas that I believe we can, right? So the PPRT, the personal property replacement tax, that is a tax on larger, you know, corporations. Again, you know, we put forth a proposal for the social media tax. We have used every single lever that's available to us locally. But, you know, unfortunately, the state has not the state has not pushed it as hard as I believe they should. Now, I know that there are individuals there who want it. As you recall, and as the voters of Chicago remember, Chicago overwhelmingly supported a progressive income tax. It failed statewide because there were other parts of the state that just did not see it that way. And by the way, there was an individual whose name will remain nameless, spent millions of dollars to defeat it. And to the governor's credit, he spent $50 million, I believe, of his own dollars to do it, right? And so it's not like the effort hasn't been tried. I just believe that, you know, we have to, you know, show a little bit of, you know, courage in this moment to continue to push for it. You know, as far as the deficit, as you know, the state of Illinois, deficit, states across America, deficit, cities across America, deficit. This is not unique to Chicago. What we are experiencing right now is that neoliberal policies for the past 30 years have created these circumstances. Remember, it was two administrations ago that said that you can balance the budget by raising property taxes over $500 million three times, while also closing our public assets, whether it was mental health clinics, schools, et cetera, et cetera. And that strategy has proven to be ineffective. And so now here we are today working to correct the wrongs of the past. You're not going to be able to cut your way towards success. There's no pathway to do that. It's already been tried. It's already been proven to be a failure. And so I'm going to continue to push to city council. There are city council members who do agree with me. There are state reps and state senators and the governor that we all agree that we need to push for progressive revenue. The state has the authority to move progressive revenue in a way in which local municipalities cannot. Mm-hmm. And so that's why when our couple of callers ago, one of our labor siblings asked, what else can we do? Let's pay attention to where the lever is. The lever is in Springfield. Before I was mayor, I would go to Springfield on a regular basis. We've taken arrests there. I mean, we have protested there, and it led to an elected representative school board. It has led to the evidence-based funding formula that allows for schools to be funded in a more equitable way. So we have seen when we place pressure at the right time, government react. We need that pressure. We can't just simply rely upon a politician or a speech. The people have to be engaged, surround their elected leaders, give them the political cover to do it. Mm-hmm. Because let me just say something out loud that I'm sure most politicians don't want to admit to. Too many of our politicians are afraid of losing their seat if they support the will of the people. And they get threatened by corporate interests. They do. And it's why, you know, you have such a concerted effort to attack me. If you look at the entities that are funding the opposition against me, they're all big corporations in the ultra rich. If you just look at who opposes us, it's a clear indication that if the will of the people ever prevails, we all win. And you—
So you're saying you don't have that fear that you just described?
No, I do not. And I do understand why folks have some level of trepidation. I didn't come here to play around and play footsie with the very people who have caused destruction. You have corporate interests that would much rather starve and ration people than work collectively with shared power to feed all people. That form of governance is played out. And we have to move forward in a concerted, unified way to make sure that our schools are funded. People are struggling right now, as you just heard from our last caller, to determine whether or not their kids should go to college. Like, think about this. We're talking about a generation. It does not see their path towards economic stability through higher learning. And it doesn't mean that everyone has to go to college, but it certainly should not be a deterrent because we just don't see the guarantee.
Right,
that everything is left to chance. That is capitalism at its finest, where it establishes winners and losers. And what I'm pushing for is an economy that works for everyone, that there's more than enough. We're talking about the richest country at the wealthiest time in the history of the world. And that includes a time in which for multiple decades, you had free labor.
also known as slavery. And we are richer than that time. And we saw the largest upward transfer of wealth into the hands of the ultra-rich by Donald Trump. If there was ever a time for us to unite, to push corporations and the ultra-rich to pay their fair share in taxes, this is that time.
Let's hear from Katie in Rogers Park. Good morning, Katie. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning. I'm an EIU alum, so go Panthers.
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
You're welcome. I'm calling because I'm really concerned about the layoffs and the pause that the Chicago Centinela has announced in the last couple of weeks. I think it's a real loss for our city if this organization disappears. We need to elevate the orchestral art form, and we especially need to do so for Black and Brown musicians. And so I'm just wondering what kind of position the city can take in support of this major cultural organization.
Yeah, thank you for that question.
And this comes at a time when music venues are struggling, as you know, Mayor,
right.
and arts workers are making less than $40,000 a year on average, right?
Yeah.
So what can the administration do?
Well, look, I believe that we do have to invest at all levels more in our arts, art programming, and our artists, right? And one of the things that we are doing through DCASE, this is the division of government that supports art and culture, is finding more ways to help supplement artists' income by using our artists as a form of mental health support, right? And we are initiating some of these programs where artists can support the mental health and well-being of our community by using their artistry to provide that level of comfort. I do believe that there are some programs, in fact, there are some programs and grants through DCASE that help support artists, you know, grow their artistry. And, you know, it's an area that I think has long been neglected, and I believe that's why it's so pronounced and severe. But my administration has dedicated more resources to DCASE than previous administrations, and we still know that that's not enough. And so I hear our concern, and we're going to continue to support these workers. We're going to continue to make investments where we can in our schools as well to encourage more of our young people to go into all forms of artistry. But it is an area that I do know that the city of Chicago, the city of Illinois, and the country as a whole, that we have to do a better job at supporting our artists.
The Chicago Public Schools is in a $732 million hole. And a WBEZ Sun-Times.
You just keep bringing bad news, Sasha.
Speaking of budget deficits,
yeah.
BEZ and the Sun-Times, though, we did an analysis that shows that could mean a loss of between 700 and 800 teaching positions in the district. What is the plan to close that deficit?
Yeah, this is severe. This goes back to what I was saying earlier. The failures of previous administrations have put us in this trick bag here. There is still time for us to win revenue in Springfield. Do not let anyone make you believe that Springfield can't act. The challenge is the only lever, the primary lever for public schools to be funded in all of our municipalities, they're through property taxes. And at a time in which affordability is the top issue, this is certainly not the time to be talking about raising property taxes. That's why it's a disappointment that what's being proposed in Springfield right now would literally give a property tax break to one of the largest corporations on the planet at a time in which affordability is the big crisis. And so we're going to have to look at everything. But what I can say is this, that there's no way to cut your way towards a balanced budget. There just isn't. And so I'm going to continue to work with our CEO, the board. As you know, the board will be fully elected in just a few months. And so those disentanglements are inevitable. But I'm going to continue to partner with our new CEO, the Board of Education, to find ways in which, you know, we can mitigate as much harm as we possibly can.
We're going back to Rogers Park, this time to talk with Mary. Hi, good morning. What's your question?
Hi, good morning. So my name is Mary Kay, and I am a mother of a trans high school student here in Chicago. And I have an overall question just about how can Chicago best protect our students against all of the MAGA attacks that we are seeing coming out of the Trump administration. I know they're attacking our Black Student Success Program. I know they're attacking our sanctuary city policies that are intended to protect our immigrant students. And they are very much attacking the policies and values that CTS has in place to protect trans children like mine.
Before you answer, Mayor, we had a caller, Olivia, who couldn't stay on the line from Hyde Park, who also asked a similar question. What's Chicago doing to protect its trans, queer, Black, and immigrant students from federal attacks?
Yeah, you know, I'm glad that you raised this and you put it into complete context. That's why that last teacher's contract was so important, because within the contract, the public schools is bound by the teacher's contract to protect all of our students, and particularly our most vulnerable. And I'm going to continue to make sure that we are investing, and that's why I released the largest TIF surplus in the history of Chicago, to ensure that social workers, counselors, psychiatrists, psychologists, and overall strong programming is in place in our public schools to protect our trans students. You know, these are students who, you know, unfortunately have been subject to mental health challenges. It's severe of how, you know, these students have been singled out by this administration. The good news is, as a state, as a city, we are the safest place. That's been well documented anywhere in the country. Chicago is the safest place for the LGBTQ plus community, and particularly our trans community. And I just hired for the first time ever in the history of Chicago a director within the mayor's office of the LGBTQ plus affairs, Mr. Antonio Keene. I would encourage Mary to connect with Antonio. Has just strong relationships within our communities throughout the city of Chicago around ways in which we can help support stronger organizations that are doing great work, whether it's Equality Illinois is one good example. But we're going to continue to invest in our public schools. We're going to continue to invest in our public institutions to support our trans community.
You had a meeting of the full city council yesterday. Alders agreed to freeze the hourly pay of Chicago's tipped workers at 76% of the minimum wage for the next 4 years for smaller places with 21 or fewer employees, and the next 2 years for large restaurants. It's not something you proposed or supported, Mayor Johnson. So tell me your thoughts.
Yeah, look, this compromise was brought, you know, together by the industry as well as advocates. I personally, I don't like it. You know, I thought that the 5-year ramp was enough time. All of the evidence indicated that it was enough time.
We see a fourth veto over this?
I mean, at this point, you know, this compromise, you know, is supported by the industry. The main sponsors of the ordinance to abolish the subminimum wage, you know, found common ground here. You know, that level of compromise, of course, tends to leave everyone upset. There was the industry wanted to roll it back completely, and that wasn't, you know, the right path moving forward. The ramp for 5 years is one that I thought was reasonable. Now the ramp is a little bit longer. Again, no, I'm not, you know, necessarily satisfied with it. But again, this is an agreement that the sponsors all came to. And, you know, I'm going to continue to push for the city of Chicago to be the most pro-worker city in America.
So you won't rule out a veto?
I'm simply saying is, like, look, people asked folks to come together and to compromise. And they did. They did.
Let's go back to the phones and continue on this cost of living, right? Someone is very worried about that right now, and that's Nate in Edgewater. Good morning, Nate. What's your question for the mayor?
Good morning, everyone. Thanks for taking my call. Real quick, and think in about 11 days, Chicago will reclaim the dubious distinction of having the highest sales tax in the nation. Right now, the cost of living is on everybody's mind. The affordability crisis is the mot du jour. Everybody's talking about it. Everything's getting more expensive. But, you know, in other places in America, when something goes up in price by 30%, it goes up 33% here. When it goes up 50% elsewhere, it goes up 55% here. And it's just killing us. And so I know affordability is a big part of your agenda, Mayor. And I just sort of wonder, you know, what can we do to, you know, give us all some relief.
Yeah. No, Nate, thank you for that. And if I could just be very vulnerable here with you, Nate, this is where I do find myself frustrated and sometimes at odds with our partners in Springfield. You know, to the point that you're raising about sales tax, there are very few levers that we have in Chicago to generate revenue to fund all of the things that you care about, Nate, whether it's transportation, housing, healthcare, jobs, you know, education. We want those services funded. We want our trash picked up. We want lights replaced. We want our trees trimmed, and we want potholes filled, right? We want all of that. We want community safety, which requires investment. And absent real action, Nate, from Springfield, local municipalities all over the state and the country are dealing with the Trump attacks right now, where local municipalities are being asked to do more and working people are struggling to make the ends meet, to put food on the table. The number of people, Nate, that I've come across who work every day full 40 hours, sometimes 45 to 60 hours a week, and they still have to go to a food pantry. It's unconscionable at a time in which there is more wealth being generated in this country than ever. And that's why we have to fight collectively and organize collectively for progressive revenue. I've used every single tool available to me through executive orders, passing progressive revenue without raising, you know, property taxes. It's getting tougher because people want those services. But to Nate's point, it's harder for people to afford to live here. So we're building affordable homes, right? We're investing in mental and behavioral health. We're hiring young people. And yet the ultra rich in this state, in this city, are not equitably sharing in the responsibility. And I'm saying all that to say is because if we generate the progressive revenue, we can find ways to reduce and release the burden on working people. And there's an exchange in which we can find the right algorithm where we raise the rates for those who have means while also lowering the rates for those who are struggling to make the ends meet. And, you know, Nate, I want you to continue to partner with me and, you know, your alder and your state rep and your state senator. We have to continue to push this message that a billionaire's tax, a digital ad tax. Do you know right now with digital ads, I mean, we're talking about $11 billion of like yearly revenue that they're not sharing because they're not taxed on it. And they flood our phones. They flood all of our devices with their ads. And there's not a tax on that. But yet a sales tax, but the very thing that they're pushing us to buy, we're being asked to pay more on the very thing that they're pushing us to buy, while they do not have to pay a tax on the thing that they're pushing us to buy. It doesn't make any sense. And so we have to be strong in this moment and courageous in this moment and confrontational and be okay with that tension. We're not going to get through this if we continue to use the same stale, failed policies that got us in this predicament in the first place.
Another question here, follow-up from that council meeting. Council also approved a nearly $55 million property tax break for developers to secure that plan to transform the parking lots around United Center into that residential and entertainment complex. You approved this subsidy, but you oppose tax breaks for the Bears Stadium. Why?
It's two different things, right? The Cook County tax incentive that has been provided for this economic development, we're talking about affordable homes, it's going to generate $46 to almost $50 million of new property tax revenue that we otherwise are not collecting, right? It's for a 12-year period versus what's being proposed in Arlington Heights, which is one of the wealthiest suburbs in the state of Illinois. We're talking about freezing taxes or providing a property tax relief for the next 40 to 45 years at a conservative estimate of $100 million per year. We're talking about $4 billion. That's unheard of. The longest tax incentive that we have in the state of Illinois right now is about 20 to 21 years. What they're proposing in Springfield right now is a $4 billion tax subsidy for a corporation that doesn't currently pay property taxes in Chicago because they play in a publicly owned stadium. This 12-year short period of time that's going to incentivize economic development on the west side that has been desolate and longing for investment. Again, we're talking about at least 1,000 affordable housing units there that will ultimately lead to $46 to $50 million of new property tax revenue. So the incentive that we're providing, the return on that happens exponentially, as well as it happens in a way that encourages not just development, but not at the expense of everyday working people.
We'll go to Eugene next for a question. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. Good morning, Mayor. Good morning. And thank you for this program. This is a wonderful program. To get to my point, I'm a UIC graduate. I studied finance and accounting, and I'm one of the DACA kids. And due to having eighth of weed on me, I got my DACA taken away. So since 2017, I've been experiencing homelessness, and it's been very difficult. And currently, I'm no longer living in my car. I'm in a domestic violence shelter, but it's ending. And I want to ask the mayor, like, do we have any safe parking program projects that we plan to implement soon, like cities like San Diego and LA is doing even though people might think it might be too cold to live in Chicago, like if you have like an electric blanket and a power bank, you can get through like I did. Thank you, Mayor.
Yeah, and thank you for your courage. I want to, if you can get his information, I do want to pass him.
Yeah, he's asking about a safe parking program similar to what exists now in San Francisco.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely want to get his information, though, because we put together a five-year plan to respond to homelessness. Again, I talked about earlier in the program, you know, my one shelter system that we created secured $65 million from the city of Illinois to do that. We additionally put $40 million into existing shelters. That's the largest investment in the history of Chicago for existing shelters. And we're on pace to build our fifth non-congregant setting. But the real answer, of course, is building more affordable units. That's how we solve the homelessness crisis across the globe. And again, we're on pace to build 10,000 units by the end of next year. I know we need 100,000. We're, you know, turning over vacant land that is city owned to developers, you know, for a nominal fee, some as low as $1 to help them develop on the land, because the more units we build, the greater we'll be able to respond to the homelessness crisis. But definitely leave his information. I want to connect him with the work that we're doing.
Sounds good. You introduced an ordinance that would pave the way for parking spots for EVs, electric vehicles. Mm-hmm. Explain how that would work real quick. And how many spots are we talking about here? Where would they be?
Yeah, I mean, look, that part hasn't been worked out yet. We're going to be working with CDOT and all of our infrastructure to figure that out. But this is, you know, the wave of the future, right? I mean, this is a way in which we're showing how environmentally sound we are. I restored the Department of the Environment after it was cut away. And we have a cumulative impact study that we're responding to. Our 100% of our public buildings are powered by renewable energy. That includes both of our airports. And I talked about earlier about the solar program that we have at Carver High School on the far south side of Chicago. So the more opportunities that we provide for these stations, it's another way, quite frankly, to generate revenue as well, while also being economically progressive, but also being environmentally sound.
Let's hear now from Mark Heath in Austin.
Come on.
Hi, Mark Heath. What's your question for the mayor?
Hello, good morning. I think it's very obvious that you're dealing with a really contentious and defiant city council. And I couldn't help but think about what Mayor Harold Washington endured. So I'm wondering, have you gotten any tips or sought any kind of ways of dealing with that same sort of scenario based on what he had to deal with?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, just last week, I sat down with many of the elders in the community. You know, shout out to Dr. Carol Adams, Brother Kupla. I mean, there were a number of these individuals who were there at that time who helped elect Mayor Harold Washington. Sat down with Mother Jacqueline Jackson as well, of course, the widow of the late, great Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. And we had this very conversation. And one of the things that they, you know, talked about was how the community, you know, really came out to support the mayor's agenda. And I think the thing that I know I'm going to do a better job at, brother, we're doing more lakeside chats around the community where we're having community town halls to make sure that the people know what our agenda is. The people united will always prevail. And that's the biggest takeaway that I'm receiving from these conversations, that we have to do a better job at organizing our interests and then pushing the city council to respond. Because check this out, this last part that I'll say is that the investments, if you've probably seen it just along Chicago Avenue in Madison, if you go and look at the project on Chicago and Laramie, that's affordable units. Just before that, you know, we have affordable units that we built. It's called the Ave, which is creating more affordable opportunities for folks that live in Austin. You look at the new wellness center, as well as expanding Malcolm X College. We're looking at the healthcare facility that's going to happen on Chicago Avenue with Pastor Contrell Jenkins, with Lori's Hospital. All of those developers are minority owned, and all of those contractors are minority owned. And so we're really clear about investing in the communities that have been historically neglected. And there are powerful forces out there that take umbrage with it. Quite frankly, they are incredibly hostile towards it. So we're going to continue to do community meetings. We're going to continue to organize around our agenda. And we're going to push city council to the place in which I believe, you know, unfortunately, when Harold Washington passed away, he had finally gotten to that point. But it took him an entire term to even get to that point. And so it's going to take a little time, you know, but if we're committed to it, I certainly am.
So this next series of questions, I'm going to need some quick answers because we're running out of time.
I'll do my best.
But we have so much to talk to you about, right? Let's stick with parking for just a second here. The company that operates the city's parking meters under a deal that Chicagoans, as you know, love to hate, it plans to sell that contract to another entity. It still needs council approval, but tell me your thoughts.
Well, that's right. First of all, it needs council approval. You know, look, I think that we have to, you know, interrogate it as much as we possibly can within the legal and legislative parameters that, you know, we're confined to, you know, and, you know, I'm hoping that the city council really takes a deeper look at this. This is something, of course, that has dogged the city for a very long time. And it's, you know, unfortunate, but, you know, the city council does have the authority to approve or not.
Mm-hmm. This question comes from a caller, Frank in Rogers Park. Says, are you considering more red light cameras? There's too many people running lights.
So I'm not personally. I do know, to Frank's point, that, you know, the local leaders have responded with that type of concern, and where they believe it's necessary, those local leaders have to bring that to our attention, and we're, you know, we will consider it, but it's not something that is top of mind for me. You know, and I'm trusting the local leaders there to make that determination.
John in North Park asks, any plans to expand city-run composting to curbside pickup?
Yes. Yes, this is a big deal for the First Lady. She's all about this. This is why we restore the Department of the Environment. We're working with some organizations. We just expanded some composting on the south side of Chicago, working with a nice, you know, community response-driven organization there. But yes, definitely, this is another way to create, you know, renewable energy. It's another way to, of course, to build a more green, blue, sustained economy. So yes, the First Lady is certainly all on this one.
Deepak in the Loop says, what can be done to improve roads and clear potholes?
Yeah, so, you know, within the first quarter, I believe we filled over 150,000 of them. Our infrastructure, let's just be honest, you all, it's crumbling. And that's why I've put forth multiple infrastructure bonds. The last one was $830 million. Our roads, our bridges, particularly at a time in which more people are coming to our city, more people are attracted to our city. People want to have conventions in our city. You know, we're building a football stadium on the South Loop where we will play soccer or international football. We're building in the Lincoln Yards that sat desolate, right? That's the 78. But now it's going to have, you know, housing there, the Lincoln Yards, rather, in 78, where the football stadium is going to be for our Chicago Fire. So with all that development, all that infrastructure, this is an opportunity for us to fix and repair, but also to go under the ground, right? Because there's some flooding issues that we've had in Chicago historically. So we're addressing all of that. All mm-hmm. of the things that have been neglected forever, that's what I'm tackling right now.
Yeah. You excited for prom season, grad season? Commencement speech
so,
season.
You know, you're not going to have an Oprah moment with me. You're not going to make me cry. You know,
I share in this with
you.
My daughter graduates tomorrow night, turns 18 on Saturday.
Gosh. Oh my goodness.
It's a lot.
It is. And listen, I'm really proud of my oldest, Owen. He's graduated from Kenwood and headed to Eastern Illinois to study accounting and finance. He's going to play soccer there. And I'm really proud of him. And yeah, so, you know, I literally go this afternoon to pick up his suit. It was had to be tailored a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And then graduation is next Tuesday. He's going to introduce me and I'm going to give the commencement.
That's pretty awesome.
I'm going to try to get through it. My wife was like, look, you're not even going to be next to me when I'm crying. I'm like, well, at least you won't be on the stage where everybody can see you cry. But congratulations to the class of 2026.
That's right. And thank you, Mayor Brandon Johnson.
You're welcome.
We appreciate your time.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Dan Tucker, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. For more in-depth coverage of news and culture in Chicago, be sure to subscribe to this podcast. For a full archive of the show, head over to wbez.org/in the loop. And thanks for listening.